The Guardian.
Hello all, James Richardson here, and before we get started with today's edition of Football Weekly, I'm going to point you in the direction of our sponsor Squarespace. For more about building beautiful websites, go to squarespace.com. And now, on with the show. It's another Football Weekly Extra on today's burning agenda: FA Cup action. Spurs get the best of Leicester, Liverpool may Exeter do just that, and Villa put out Wickham men. If only they'd been there for poor old Edward Woodward. There's also Premier League news with the second City derby, Baggies against informed Villa, and Arsenal-Chelsea, woof. Abroad, Scotland, France, that Coppa Italia business, Napoli's manager has homophobic rant and he's sorry. All that and more in this Football Weekly Extra. Hi, friends. You join us at an exciting time here, really, in Podland. Among the many discussions that we've been having, knitwear and the timing of Easter, which coincides with the international weekend. Have to say, we've all turned up in knitwear. We all, big, in this case, Barry Glendenning. Hi, Barry.
Hello.
Greg Bukowski.
Hi, James.
In a lovely, the green, how would you describe your collar there, Greg?
I don't know.
It's a Lincoln
a bit
green.
5 years ago.
It's kind of a Nick Kershaw-esque snood effect.
Yeah, there is a snood thing on that. We might take a picture or something.
Wouldn't it be good?
Yeah. Look behind you. There's the man you're chasing. That was my favourite Nick Kershaw line. That was from Human Racing. It even rhymes as well. It's brilliant. The winner of today's Woolly top competition, Philippe Auclair. Can you explain? Where did you get that jumper, Philippe?
Norway.
Right.
Yes.
Even in Norway, I'd suggest it's a pretty rare piece of knitwear.
It's normally you use that for skiing, like Telemark skiing and things like that. Oh, it's made merino wool with metal clasps.
It's a little metal clasp.
Lovely.
There's a little Lovely. Bit of a winter is coming element to those. Sorry?
It's kind of a Santa's elf effect. I'm trying to help the listeners here, this being an oral medium. Mm.
Those metal clasps are very difficult to do. They're quite hard to put together.
I bet you don't touch. I bet they're for effect. Oh, no, they're not. Wow. They open. And what's really disconcerting, listeners, is that they stand atop a big green arrow that's pointing very much down towards... Anyway... self-indulgent opening knitwear chat, tick. Let's move on to the FA Cup. Greg, I bet... Were you all over the FA Cup replay action this week?
I was all over Liverpool and Exeter. And
right.
I was spread across some of the action on Tuesday.
That's some good goals, wasn't
work.
They?
Yes, yeah. I particularly enjoyed Ojo's goal for Liverpool yesterday. Very nice, very nice. Just used the defender as a marker in front of him and used him to kind of get in the way of the goalkeeper's sight and put it in the top corner. Very
right.
nice.
Reading had some nice goals. Son's goal for Spurs. They beat Leicester 2-0. They're going to be facing Colchester. They go to Colchester next, Spurs, in the fourth round. Villa, one of those goals I think was pretty nice as well, as they made their way eventually past Wycombe Wanderers. And they'll be facing Man City, excitingly, in the fourth round, in a delicately poised tie, that one. And West Brom beat Bristol City. And Barry, did you catch any of this?
I saw the Leicester-Spurs game.
Oh, yeah.
Which, yeah, it was a decent game. Spurs went a goal up, and Leicester were really tearing into them. You know, being the home side, I suppose they were obliged to. It looked as if it was only a matter of time before they were going to score, and then they sort of went down to a sucker punch from Nasser Chadli, and that kind of killed the game off, really. But, you know, Claudio Ranieri didn't seem too upset afterwards.
Does he ever?
No, he doesn't. I'm wondering what it would take for him to get upset. But, you know, Spurs killed the game off, and that was kind of a shame watching from a neutral point of view, because it was getting very exciting. But they just kind of caught Leicester on the break, and that was it.
As I say, their reward, a trip to Colchester. Graham Hackney asked for some love for Carlisle, who have travelled so far in the FA Cup, 2,297 miles. That includes a 200-mile round trip for a home game, because of the flooding. Their latest jaunt, anyway, was all the way down to Yeovil, where they drew 1-1 and then beat the home side 5-4 on penalties. They're going to be playing Everton.
And as we know from Ian McIntosh, having travelled with them earlier this season, that there's a hardcore group of Carlisle fans who go to every single one of those games, which is heroic and slightly insane, you'd have to say, but there you go.
Speaking of FA Cup heroics,
oh, yeah.
I think the biggest heroes have got to be any Bradford City and Bury fans who went to both of those 0-0 matches that they played out and then watched the 0-0 30 minutes of extra time before finally seeing the penalties and Bury go through.
Right, we salute them too. Mm. Mm. Did you catch any FA Cup action, Philippe?
I caught Coupe de France. I was more interested in what was happening in France. But just one word about Spurs. And, you know, because there's been a lot of about Pochettino disrespecting the FA Cup by fielding a second, you know, tier 11. I had a look at the starting 11 yesterday against Leicester, the 11 internationals. So I have to say, I don't quite see where the disrespect is.
I didn't know he'd been catching flak for that, had he?
It seems quite unfair to give anyone.
Eric Lamela was, you know, playing like that. Son is not exactly a poor player. I mean, Walker was playing. Eric Dier was playing. Nabil Bentaleb, who had been excellent last season and who's been pushed a bit to the side by the extremely good performances of some of the other midfielders. So I don't think it was a side which resembled a bit the one he's been using in the Europa League to some effect.
Voilà.
Voilà.
Voilà. That was early. Anyway, now we move on to Arsenal-Chelsea.
Not a word about the Coupe de France?
We'll have that later on.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't want to, like, top-load the show.
With Coupe de France, that's very true.
No, you want to...
And the fantastic performance of Trélissac.
Oui. And what happened to PSG? Listeners, you'll have to wait to find out. Because right now we're going to talk about Arsenal-Chelsea. Let's get that out of the way. Poor old Arsene Wenger. He'll never beat Mu, will he? Mourinho, because he's gone. So, and this would have been the perfect occasion, Philippe.
Yes, as was the last one they met. And then when he lost 2-0.
Yeah.
Yes, you remember that game.
I do.
Costa, Gabriel, all this nonsense.
Beat them in the big Charity Shield match this
season.
True. The one that really
Absolutely.
Mattered.
That was huge. Yeah. There was a trophy at stake.
Do you suppose it's something that keeps Wenger awake at night or bothers him?
Philippe?
I don't think Mourinho does. Not anymore. No, I don't think so.
Okay. No. It's not just,
I wouldn't have thought so.
It's not just Wenger, though, that has a rotten record against Chelsea. The whole side, they haven't scored in the last 8 hours and 2 minutes of Barclays Premier League football against the side from Stamford Bridge.
My gosh, is that so?
They last beaten them in the league in October 2011, I think.
But there was the 5-3 at
that was 2011.
With the hat-trick, Robin van Persie and John Terry falling on his arse. Yeah.
They should beat them this time, though. Is that right?
You would think so, especially since it should be expected that Ozil will be available again after...
Inflamed toe.
The inflamed toe. And I would imagine perhaps Alexis on the bench as well. I mean, the signs are pretty encouraging. So it's looking more and more like a full-strength Arsenal side.
And I'm seeing reports that Diego Costa, who's on that 5 goals in 5 games under Hiddink run, might not feature, that he's got a knock or something.
He took a really, really bad knock.
Yeah, there's phone calls being made downstairs about that.
Are there?
I was at the game, that was during the 3-all. Right. Thrilling 3-all against Everton, and he took a real whack, and he looked in tremendous amount of pain.
Is it ribs or something?
No. It's the shin. Not
the
fracture.
Bruised the bone.
But bruised bone, which is extremely painful, I can tell you that.
Although, didn't he once... He got a gash in his shin and got it stitched up and carried on playing for Atletico Madrid in...
But that would be less painful than a bruised bone.
Okay. Is there nothing more painful than a bruised bone, Barry?
Would imagine there probably is.
Like a broken bone, for instance.
Kicking the balls? Short term, I'd say kick. But over time, bruised bone.
Okay. Chelsea are still just utterly, I don't know, they're just a very confusing team this season. They're like watching a malfunctioning monster or something. Like they should be frightening, but they just keep getting up and walking into a wall whenever they go anywhere. And that's what they've done.
A monster, perhaps.
A monster, a monster. And, you know, they've done it kind of again under Hiddink in that they looked like there was a mini revival going on. Then they've stumbled again, and now they're faced with, a very big match. And they're still down there. They're still...
They're just 4 points off the drop now.
And this is it. They play they've got a game now that they're not expected to get anything from. So... It's not easy by any stretch, but they have got all the components there that they should.
Are those expectations of them not getting anything, are they deceptive expectations, do you think, Greg? Is this one of those matches is going to turn around and bite us on the bum?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. If this season's anything to go by, whatever we think is going to happen probably won't happen.
But we've seen that Hiddink was not adverse to deploying a very, very defensive formation that was against Everton at home. Mm-hmm. We had Matic and Mikel playing just behind Fabregas, which is not exactly risk-taking. So you can imagine more of the same, I would imagine.
You think it's going to be quite an arid defensive performance from Chelsea, is it?
Well, the Arsenal-Chelsea game, I mean, the last one I remember, that was the 0-0 last year, which was...
There was a 0-0 before that one, I think, as well.
Yeah, it's really painful, really painful to watch. Mm. I saw them play at Crystal Palace, and I thought second half, that's Chelsea, they were excellent. Then I saw them against Everton. I thought, my gosh, that was absolutely terrible. And the other thing is that Eden Hazard probably won't be fit again. They want to go to the bottom, so to speak, of his injury. Mm-hmm. And which means that you've got your most creative player. You can't out and you can't rely all the time on Willian making the difference, and which is what is happening.
You say their most creative player, but he's contributed, I think, 3 assists and absolutely no goals all season.
No goals, but he's created chances and... Also, no, he has created chances, and there have been moments where you thought he's coming back, and then new injury.
Mm. I mean, we all know what Arsenal are capable of at both ends of the spectrum, and them at home. But if they're even playing at 8 out of 10, I would expect them to win this game comfortably. Chelsea could possibly rise to the occasion, but their defence is a total mess, and they haven't improved that much under Gus Hiddink.
The results have improved. You could say that.
Yeah, I don't at least the performances have, though.
Well, the performances, I said there was one good half against Crystal Palace. But at least in the results, I think it's 6 games unbeaten in the Premier League and qualification as well in the FA Cup, so which is, decent compared to what preceded this.
Mm. 6 games unbeaten, as you say.
6, yes.
Yeah, although just 4 points from the drop.
Yep.
Wow. And talk of them signing Patono, Con24 says, can the pod talk about the joke of our transfer policy? Chalobah out, Pato and Lovetzi in.
Kjær Jarabshian.
Is that what that's about? Pato just seems Pato, why would you want to sign Pato with the best will in the world? Especially after Falcao. Falcao.
There is no explanation for that.
Well, there's one.
Well, there is one.
Yeah.
I mean, if we talk about the Pato of, some of the things we saw at Milan. Yes, of course, you could understand that. But now, it's one goal every 3 games, isn't it, in Brazil?
He's done really well, but...
But it's a very... It's not perhaps the highest level of competition there.
Imagine parachuting him into the Premier League at this stage in the season with Chelsea, stuttering and being a lot of pressure on them. I just can't imagine Pato coping with that particularly well.
Mm.
Barney wrote a very good column about him some time back and sort of said he's one of those players, he's too costly to keep and too costly to sell.
Right. They just republished that one, actually.
Okay.
But the one about whether signing the duck is the new jumping the shark in football parlance. Another little break, listeners. Lord knows you've earned it. Catchy. Anyway, of course, the exciting thing about the Premier League is that Arsenal, Leicester level on points, City just a point behind, the top 3 within 1 point. Oh, it's ever so exciting. And who knows which way it could go. This weekend, Arsenal taking on Chelsea, Leicester at home to Stoke. Oh, I've got an amazing Leicester stat. You've probably seen it by now because I think everyone else has started to use this as well. Leicester have been on top of the Premier League table for a grand total of 33 days this season. What's remarkable about that, Barry, is that that's exactly the same number of days that Spurs have been on top of the Premier League table ever.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. Thanks, Philippe. Yeah.
There's only one day that counts, Jimbo, each season.
A very interesting game, this one, Leicester-Stoke, because I haven't seen Stoke mentioned very often as a possible candidate for top 4, and...
Mark Hughes talked that up a little about 2 weeks ago for the first time. And then as soon as that happened, I think they've had a couple of not-so-good results. And I think he's been a bit careful now because they don't seem to deal with the
last result was the 0-0 against Arsenal, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Which was an excellent performance. I mean, cracking second half in particular, and they were I think they're absolutely excellent and really underrated, certainly better to watch than Manchester United.
I just don't think my brain can stretch that far. It requires an elasticity of thought that I'm not capable of. But you're saying Stoke top four, they're 6 points off at the moment. Shaqiri could return for them this weekend.
I mean, their away form is excellent. Mm. They've only lost 3 out of 12. Kept a lot of clean sheets, I think 5 or 6. In this fixture, at the Britannia, this was a game where Stoke were 2-0 up and blew it. Leicester came back in the second half. But the goals have sort of dried up for Leicester now, you know.
Certainly.
Mahrez hasn't scored, assisted in any of the last 5 games. He's missed 2 penalties. So that's quite a slump in form. Jamie Vardy can't score anymore.
None in 7 for him.
Right, okay.
Yeah, he had an operation, though, hasn't he, as well?
That's true.
Which, he was only out for one match, I think, which is quite incredible.
Mm.
I'll give you a remarkable Leicester stat, actually.
Go on, then.
If you want one.
Mm-hmm.
They're the only team in the Premier League that has not scored a goal from outside the penalty area, opposition penalty area this
really?
Season. Yes.
That's an amazing stat, Barry. They do have an excellent home record, do Leicester. Are they going to rediscover their verve in this match? Or are Stoke going to continue their march to the Champions League?
I don't know. Like I say, Stoke have excellent away form, yeah. So it'll be a real test of Leicester's home form. It's one of the more interesting games.
Greg, what do you think? Weekend.
Well, Leicester have tightened up at the back since they've stopped scoring, which has been particularly helpful. Stoke, although they've been good on the road, I think overall this season they haven't scored an awful lot of goals. I think there've been standout performances which have perhaps coloured people's views towards the kind of, you know, the new Stoke, the fancy, pretty, you know, attacking Stoke. But
Sunderland have scored more goals than Stoke. I've said it all.
That.
Yeah, that's quite damning. All you know, I could see this perhaps being a draw. I don't think Stoke have enjoyed having any expectations placed upon them. There maybe won't be so much here. So
flying under the radar. Mm. Of course, they've got that League Cup semi coming up against Liverpool. Is that's just under a week's time. Is it next midweek, I think?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Do you buy into this notion of them troubling the stadia of Europe in the Champions League?
They could do. I mean, they could very easily be in the running because it's so tight.
Got lots of players with Champions League experience.
Yeah, I mean, Shaqiri's going to come back from injury shortly. I don't think he's going to be out for an awful long time. And I think perhaps keeping those three fit up front is going to be key to those hopes. Although they have shown that they can play in, you know, various different ways and being tight at the back as well.
Right, OK. West Ham are taking on Man City, who sit a point behind Leicester and Arsenal. Philippe,
why
are you excited about this game?
Why always me? Interested.
Yeah,
interested, not particularly
exciting. I mean, it could be a terrific game.
It could be a terrific game, and I actually remember a wonderful West Ham City when Alex Song had probably one of the best games of his life, a 2-1 victory. Silva scoring for Manchester City. It was absolutely magnificent. I'm not sure we're going to have more of the same. I'm intrigued, though, because City's last result, I mean, this 4-0 win over Palace, I thought it's one of those scorelines which, what Mourinho would call a fake result.
Right.
And they looked distinctly shaky, actually, Manchester City, for the opening, quarter of an hour, 20 minutes of the game. And had Palace had all, you know, their strikers fit and ready, it might have been very different indeed. You would imagine that West Ham has got more arguments and could trouble that defence again, because we're still absolutely no idea when Vincent Kompany is going to come back. It's absolutely unbelievable, this.
Wow.
I mean,
West Ham coming off a defeat themselves at Newcastle, but that was their only defeat in 8 games.
Yeah,
is that a false result as well?
No, I wouldn't say that. I would say that West Ham, I mean, I wish Jacob were here, but sometimes you must tear your hair out because you never know what exactly to expect. Sometimes they look absolutely terrific. Other times they look, I wouldn't say a rabble, but they look pretty mediocre or average.
They had an awful lot of injuries, didn't they? Which that's when they had that dip in form. And I think they'd drawn something like 5 or 6.
Payet is back now.
Now they're getting the full strength squad back. I think it's probably easier to assess them.
Although Carroll, Lanzini and Diafra Sakho, I think, out for this game. Of course, they did win this game at the Etihad earlier this season, but then West Ham had that terrific record against the big clubs away from home. Oh. Wow, it's a tough one to call that. So should we just spin straight on to the other side in the top four, Spurs, who will have their go at Crystal Palace, the increasingly toothless Crystal Palace. They haven't scored in five matches. Three of those games have ended in defeat. The other two were draws. And, of course, Spurs, Philippe, again, I'm going to ask you about this.
Mm-hmm.
They are the team that concede the fewest chances to the opposition.
Yep.
So this is going to be a really, could be a very dry afternoon, very frustrating afternoon for Palace
for Crystal
fans.
Palace, yes, yeah. Okay, yes, for Crystal Palace. So, I entirely agree with you. I'm very, very impressed with this Tottenham side, week after week after week. And it's been said before, but let's say it again, you know, the fact that they've now got this Alderweireld Vertonghen duo in central defence, and the fact that you have people like Eric Dier, and, you know, who have suddenly come out of nowhere, almost.
Or Portugal in this,
or Portugal in this instance, but suddenly he has been morphed into a magnificent midfielder. I mean, they look extremely solid. He's rotated the squad as well, very reasonably. And again, he's got fantastic resources from the bench. And Palace, they still created chances again. I come back to that game against City. They created chances. They can always be dangerous because of the pace in the team and so forth.
Do they have anyone like Bolasie coming back? When's he due back? Because it's since he went out of the team that their results have just come to a... We hit one of your brick walls, Greg.
Mm. Mm. Even though Zaha has been pretty good for them. But in any case, if you have both, then that's, I wouldn't say it's a terrifying prospect. But
they can drag defenders out either way and create chances for, you know, particularly midfielders who are coming through.
Yeah. But, I mean, right. I think even Alan Pardew has conceded that they were going through a delicate phase, shall we say. And Tottenham is not. Tottenham... You know, I can see the Spurs doing something nice there and coming back a bit closer to the top.
Once again, there's talk of Adebayor maybe being picked up by Palace to answer their goal-scoring needs. It might help, actually, if they drop Wayne Hennessy after his
yeah, well, he's had two ricks in consecutive games. I think Adebayor would probably be a decent signing.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, his record is good. He's come in with a point to prove... And I don't know what the finances of such a deal would be, but Palace desperately needs someone to score goals. He's a goal scorer and he's available. So why not?
How fit is he, is the question.
Well, yes, and that's a good question. I think I saw somewhere recently he was posing with a new Rolls Royce he'd bought.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Still don't understand why Palace sold Glenn Murray so easily. I mean, he was... Just because he almost seemed he was a bit unfashionable, so they got shut of him when he was just a goal scorer who scores goals, which is what they need.
Absolutely. Man United just 2 points behind Spurs in fifth place after their victory away at Anfield last weekend, and they're going to be hosting Saints. Rooney, Greg, as you saw at Anfield, with his fourth goal in four matches.
Yes, it's an intriguing one, this. I think both clubs were struggling a few weeks ago. They've since had minor recoveries. United have 5 unbeaten. Southampton have won the last two. It's really difficult to know. I can't imagine fans, Manchester United fans who've been, you know, craving this entertaining football. They saw that at Newcastle. The balance seemed to be, you know, out of whack a little bit. They conceded 3 goals. At Liverpool, they started with the same, kind, you know, similar formation where I thought they were going to be much more attacking than they were, and yet they weren't.
You mean the formation with what? Lingard on one side and Martial?
Yeah, with Lingard and Martial.
You'd expect that to be quite aggressive.
I'd have thought they'd have been a little bit more aggressive in the way they came at Liverpool, and they weren't, which was a little confusing. And they won the game, but they didn't win it in the way I thought they would with that formation. I think fans at Old Trafford might be a little bit disappointed because Southampton have won their games at home and they've won them comfortably away from home. They've not been very good this season, and I think they might play in a similar way to how they did against Arsenal by being compact and deep and probably trying to frustrate Manchester United. So I don't think the style of United is going to change in the way that the fans would like, although they may end up nicking the game 1-0.
Right, but unlikely to be a goal scored in the first half if stats are to be believed. Yeah. When you say the way that Southampton did against Arsenal, you mean in that 4-0?
Sorry, in the victory at home against Arsenal. Where
4-0?
Where I thought they worked really, really hard. I'm not suggesting they'll score goals, but like they did in that game, but I think they may look to play on the counter-attack and utilise Shane Long's pace in behind Manchester United's defence. But I don't think they'll get as many chances against Manchester United as he did against Arsenal on that particular night.
Probably not going to get a goal in the first half. Probably not going to get a last-minute winner from Saints, because we were trading stats earlier. Here's an extraordinary one. Michael Cox stuck on Twitter earlier. Arsenal, 2007, is the only time in Premier League history, for what that's worth, since 1992, that Man United have conceded a last-minute winner. Says Michael Cox. I'm not going to disagree with him. Amazing. So, all right, so we don't think there's going to be many goals at Man United Saints. Probably not in Arsenal Chelsea.
Sorry, it just seems to be, and as preposterous a proposition as West Ham winning the league is. Exactly, thank you. But it just seems to me that anyone from West Ham up, if they could just go on a run, that the league really is there for the taking. Does anyone think, you know, who would be your suggestion of a team that might do that?
I think the team which is currently first, and also the team which is currently fourth.
Spurs?
Yeah, Spurs.
More
than
Man City?
I don't know. I'm just not convinced by this Manchester City side. I'm sorry. I'm not talking about the quality of the squad or anything like that. I'm talking about the way the team is performing. But if you look at it, I mean, at the moment, the leader after 22 rounds of the Premier League is the average is 2 points per game. And normally, 2 points per game would only give you, well, that's 76 points.
Right.
So a chance to be qualified to finish in the top four, not more than that. And if you compare with the other leagues in Europe, you will see that almost every single leader there is at 2.5, 2.6, or you know, something like that. None of the clubs at the moment has shown the kind of form that you would expect from a potential title winner.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
I think Aguero's due some good form again, though, before the end of the season.
He doesn't get injured again.
Yeah, he had his injuries, and he's coming, you know, he's coming back towards fitness now. I think if he starts scoring again, then that will be huge for City.
It's an exciting top four that we can look forward to then in May, with what, West Ham top, Stoke in the Champions League, Leicester probably filling out, and maybe Spurs alongside them. And
wouldn't that be fantastic?
It'd be amazing.
Fantastic.
And then down in the bottom three, who's going to be in that? That's the question, which we're actually going to move on to after this.
Hello listeners, producer Ben here with details of an offer from Cornerstone, the official shaving partner of Football Weekly. You all know that shopping for razor blades is dull, as are the final shaves from the last razor in your pack. So why not save yourself time and money and get a closer shave than ever before with an uber sharp, uber smart German engineered razor of the year from Cornerstone. Just visit cornerstone.co.uk/guardian, enter your initials, pick the delivery scheme that suits you best, and your shaving products will be delivered right to your door. Because you listen to Football Weekly, Cornerstone are giving you £10 of your first delivery. And what's more, if you're not 100% satisfied, they'll give a full refund with absolutely no questions asked. So head to cornerstone.co.uk/guardian to pick up a personally engraved heavy-duty handle and 6 award-winning blades from just 4 of your English pounds. That's cornerstone.co.uk/guardian.
Bingo. Down the bottom of the table, 14th place Chelsea are within 4 of the drop. Below them, Bournemouth, Norwich and Swansea. And then in the bottom three, Newcastle, Sunderland and Aston Villa. Which relegation game excites you the most this weekend, Barry?
That would be Sunderland-Bournemouth.
Wow.
Obviously,
which is
a huge game for both teams. Bournemouth had the opportunity to put, you know, 3 points between themselves and Sunderland, which would obviously be huge. Sunderland are at home. Their home form has improved a bit in so far as they've, I think in their last 6 at home, they've won 3, lost 3, which isn't great, but it's a considerable improvement on 1-3, lost 12, which was their form before that. As we're bandying stats about, I saw one this morning somewhere, Bournemouth have scored in the opening 15 minutes of games more than any other team 7 times in the league this season. And there's a very good chance they'll make it 8 this season or this weekend, because the Sunderland defence is very poor.
Right. And they've spent all that money, of course, on forwards. Although, producer Ben tells me that there's doubt over the involvement of Benik Afobe, who got on the score sheet last weekend. Mm-hmm. And also...
Why is there doubt over...
I don't know. Producer Ben, why is there doubt? Because he's got a knock on his knee.
All right, I would have had him nailed on to score in that game, actually.
All right, well, maybe he will. But, you know, I mean, stats-wise, the people who've really been tearing it up are Sunderland's very own Jermaine Defoe and Adam Johnson. Defoe's had 5 goals since the turn of the year. Johnson has had 4 assists since the turn of the year, more than twice as many as any other player. Oh, twice as many, actually.
Sorry, I'd just like to say I credited Sunderland with far too much success. There was 3 out of 19 at home before their current runs.
Right, OK. Here's another Sunderland stat for you. Every time that Sunderland have debuted a keeper this season, there's been 3 occasions, they've shipped 4 goals. So let's just hope they haven't got a full-string keeper ready to bring in this weekend for your sake, Barry. Who will be between the posts? Will it be Pickford again?
I would imagine so. He's played... very well in their past 2 games, despite conceding 7 goals.
Mm.
But like I said on Monday, I worry for the boy, because playing behind that defence, his confidence could be in tatters before too long.
Right. OK. The other side's along with them in the bottom three. Of course, Newcastle, who are at Watford, who lost at Swansea. They've lost 4 games in a row now. And Newcastle looking impressive against West Ham. They signed Jonjo Shelvey. Here's Dr. Eightball saying that getting £12 million for Shelvey was a great piece of business by Swansea. The only things bigger than his ego at the moment are the distances he insists on hopelessly shooting from. Not a Shelvey fan, Dr. Eightball. Andros Townsend and Saido Berahino. Andros Townsend has been repeatedly linked with a move to St. James's. Saido Berahino has been repeatedly linked with a move. Although... the great Leroy Rossini pointed out this week, why would you buy a striker who's not even good enough to get in the West Brom team?
Well, I think he is good enough to get in the West Brom team in terms of footballing ability. He's more than good enough, but he seems to have, I don't know whether it's him or his representative, but there seems to be a major problem there. And I wouldn't say it was a spat, just a debate on Twitter with some guy, I can't remember his name, sorry. Earlier this week, but he was saying that Berahino will go on to great things, and I think, judging on what he's done in the past, I think it could go either way, and in 2 or 3 seasons' time, he might be lucky to get a game in the Championship.
Isn't it a problem with, rather than with his manager, with the hierarchy of the club and the chairman in particular, who didn't enjoy, say, Berahino's behaviour? Was the end of last season?
Well, he seems to have problems with punctuality. He's been done, I think, for drunk driving. He when he agitated for a move and didn't get one, the rattle came out of the pram. And I appreciate he's only a kid, and the impetuosity of youth and all that, but I do think he needs to just concentrate on playing and scoring goals.
Well, I think that's the point.
If he does that, then the move will come, money will come.
But I think West Brom seems to be holding out for too much money. I think there's been talked about that they want still upward of £20 million for him. And if he's not playing and nobody can see what he's capable of, then
of course, money's no object to Newcastle these days. And what a turnaround from Mike Ashley, the man who never spent money at all. Did you know that only the two Manchester clubs have spent more than Newcastle in the last 2 transfer windows?
Well, that's a very simple explanation for that, is because he knows he stands to make far more money next year. That's the only reason why he's investing the money.
It's a bit ironic that he's still in the bottom three then.
But they also spend money in the transfer window at a time in the season when perhaps things are starting to go wrong, and therefore try and rescue the situation rather than having a more... long term.
I mean, can you imagine actually missing out on the bonanza of the new contracts? I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm. Because he's not won 4 contracts much, is he, in his other business dealings? Greg, are Watford going to end their, 4-game losing streak here?
I quite fancy Newcastle there. I think they'll nick that.
Okay. Now, all that talk of Berahino has got me excited to talk about the match that he almost certainly won't be featuring in, although who knows. It's that. Second City Derby is West Brom take on Aston Villa. One of the reasons I'm most excited about this game, there have been 12 occasions that a team has not made a single shot on target in the Premier League this season. A quarter of those have been West Brom. Bizarre for Tony Pulis.
To know something else, this is the power of the Premier League. Aston Villa and West Brom have just been named among the world's 30 richest clubs.
Are they in the 30?
Mm. Yeah.
Fantastic. Hey, Villa, they are an exciting team, though. They are now in on a four-game unbeaten run, thanks to the
including the cup.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But no, they drew with Leicester last weekend in another kind of derby. Was that last weekend? Recently. No, yes. Yeah, in another Midlands derby thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, you can see there is, I mean, I do think that people are starting to see that there is a genuine Rémi Garde effect, and he's really working very hard. But the problem is that I think we probably would all agree it's the weakest squad in the league. Certainly, when you look at the defence and midfield, actually.
So many unknowns that, you know, amongst the players, you just don't know what they're capable of because nobody seems to have seen them for long enough before to sign them.
I mean, there are signs of life. I wouldn't say there's strong, particularly strong pulse or anything, but it's a start.
10 points.
The worry is it coming too late, and how quickly? I think they will improve, but how quickly can they stir into something approaching full health?
Ten points separate them from safety, although they cannot now be the worst Premier League team ever because they've already sailed past, not barely half a season played, Derby's 11-point total for the campaign.
I did notice Rémi Garde had a go at Jack Grealish after their...
What was the issue there?
Well, he just said he's not doing enough, you know, and his form has kind of gone off a cliff. And I suppose
a bit
it's
like Leonardo DiCaprio in The Revenant.
I haven't seen that yet, I'm looking forward to it.
Extraordinary.
Have you seen The Room yet?
No, but that's meant to be extraordinary too. And I haven't seen Norwich play Liverpool yet, but this weekend I will, because it's the early kickoff and we'll be on TV. Hey, Greg, Liverpool have scored just one solitary measly goal in their last four Premier League matches away. Did you know? Three of those have been defeats. Oh, but this is Norwich, so your problems are over.
Yeah, well, it's Norwich who've just signed Stephen Naismith.
Yeah, but it's Norwich who you've scored like 20 goals in the last two meetings with.
They're on the back of four defeats in a row. Liverpool should win this game if they can score a goal, which that is going to be the issue.
Right.
So frustrating watching Liverpool. That performance against Manchester United, for instance, where...
It's good, no?
They did very well, but then there's just nobody... You know, before the match, you look at the team and you pick a goal scorer from who they've got out there, and there's nobody who's particularly confident in front of goal at the moment or has any particularly history of scoring lots of goals. Benteke, the one who maybe does, is on the bench and looks like he's lacking so much confidence too.
You say that, but Roberto Firmino had absolutely wonderful game against Arsenal. That was not that long ago at all. Yeah.
No, I know he did. But
also against Manchester City.
Yeah, but that's the two performances. He is improving, but I don't think you can put your money on him to score you the goals that are necessary, which is why they're interested in signing Alex Teixeira.
Oh, yeah. Teixeira is on his way, or...?
Yes.
They haven't bid enough money, is my understanding.
Yeah, which is... I think they're still in negotiations. I think Ian Airey's off on his Harley Davidson, off to meet somebody somewhere.
In Florida, so it's going to be a long trip.
Yeah, to try and do a deal. Yeah, or maybe he's hiring a Harley out in Florida.
Okay.
I think they should...
Followed by a camera crew for a new TV reality show.
Yeah.
I think they should not break the bank, but, you know, if it's only an extra couple of million or so, get him, pay it. I think he'd be a very good signing.
You like him? Shakhtar Donetsk.
Well, I think
he's
very prolific. He can play anywhere in midfield. He can up front. He's prolific and he's full of energy. Runs around like a busy, busy bee. And that's, you know, I think he would suit the Klopp model very well.
All right.
A player who's been trying to show that he could suit the Klopp model very well in the last few games, particularly, has been Joe Allen, who has kind of been forgotten about at Liverpool. It was Brendan Rodgers' signing. When he's been playing well in the recent games, he played in the Capital One Cup and played very... He was man of the match, I thought, against Stoke in that game. He came on and scored against Arsenal in the league as a substitute. He changed his appearance to look like Andrea Pirlo with his long flowing locks and his grown a beard. And that seems to have drawn only more kind of mirth from the casual observer when his performances have actually been really, really good, and he's been playing the high-intensity pressing football that Klopp seems to
want. That's always been Andrea Pirlo's trademark as well.
Well, yeah, that's where the comparisons end. And it's be interesting to see whether Klopp will put him in the side, because he's somebody who's knocking on the door and probably deserves a chance now.
Any of the young'uns who shone against Exeter?
Yeah, another Teixeira who has been around at Liverpool for a while, who looks like he's got slippers on his feet, plays the game in a lovely controlled fashion, has got a lovely touch, who I think maybe in and around the squad for the latter part of this season particularly.
And also, producer Ben was just reminding me, one of the most highly rated players among other, you know, Liverpool colleagues, Flanagan, back after... Is he actually kind of match fit after 2 years?
Well, he's only played a couple of games, so I don't think he's match fit. I thought he was very sure footed when he played the other night against Exeter, and it's been such a shame what's happened to him, because he was a player who did so much to work his way back into the affections of the manager and the fans at Liverpool. He came through as a youngster, it didn't particularly look like he was going to do what was required, and then came back as a left back and filled in wherever was necessary, wing back, left back, right back, and was fantastic in the season when Liverpool almost won the league, and then got injured and we haven't seen him since. So it'd be very nice if he could come back, and also he'd be a connection between the fans and the club, you know, and you know, it is very nice to have a local player
absolutely
in the team.
All right, Norwich meantime still smarting from all those massive defeats against Liverpool have gone and bought Stephen Naismith. That's gone through now, is it?
Yeah, I think it's a good signing as well. I think any other season he'd have been a regular. Well, actually, maybe not, but he couldn't get into this Everton team despite scoring a hat trick against Chelsea. But you know, he's really honest professional, rolls his sleeves up, he works so hard, and if he's in form, he'll get you goals.
All right, will he get goals this weekend? What's going to happen? Norwich-Liverpool? It's a tough one.
If Norwich play like they did last weekend, they'll get thumped, but I don't think it's conceivable they could play that badly again.
I'm going to finish off our Premier League roundup with Everton-Swansea, a team that's rubbish at home against one that's rubbish away and at home. Swansea coming off a win against Watford. Boy, did they need that. And Everton off that 3-3 with Chelsea. It's going to be interesting on the sideline because you've got Roberto Martinez, formerly of Swansea. And then, well, I'm not sure who's going to be on the standing in front of the Swansea bench. Possibly two people. Alan Curtis and the man who's officially their head coach, Francesco Guidolin. Anyway, well, that's a big game then for a Swansea side that's only 1 point off the bottom three. And Everton, Swansea on Sunday at 1:30.
And Everton already 11 draws this season.
Right,
their game's drawn.
Amy Lawrence was saying, can we call them the drawingest team in the Premier League? Josh Otterson saying, drawingest, I'm sure you mean Everton have been drawful this season. Top work.
Which is not true, by the way. They haven't been drawful at all to watch.
No,
they haven't.
Your glass is half full, they've been drawsome.
Very nicely done. Very nicely done. Now, a pause, and then foreign stuff. Hey, am I the only one that loves the new Squarespace advert? Ask ID 7563217, who is the only one who loves the new Squarespace advert.
I haven't heard it yet.
Have you not?
No.
All right, Punjabi Gunner says, guys, great result for Inter last night. This is in the Coppa Italia, the Italian Cup quarterfinals. But what did Sarri allegedly say to Mancini to get him so angry? Well, I imagine by now, Punjabi Gunner, you've seen these reports. They had a bit of a touchline bust-up, and Sarri called Mancini a froscio and a finocchio, which is kind of like, you know, rude words for a gay person. And Mancini reported him. He said, I wasn't offended, but he has offended a lot of people who suffer abuse and suffer for this kind of language every day. So, and it looks like, although it's not always the most kind of enlightened environment, Serie A, on Italian football generally, that it looks like Sarri could be in a lot of trouble. Might be a two-game ban. There's even people talking about 4 months.
You've got a chairman of the Italian FA who generally puts his foot in it about every other day.
Yeah.
And in far worse terms than that.
Yes.
And he gets away scot-free.
Well, it's just good that they're doing something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
If they do something. We haven't seen what they're going to do yet. He's not new to this, by the way. He got away with it scot-free last time.
Okay.
In 2014, there's a fabulous... I mean, really fabulous in the wrong way. But he was furious about the sending off of one of his players when he was in charge of Empoli. And he... I mean, this is a translation. He basically said, football has become a... And I must apologise for the language. But he said, football has become a sport for fags, he said after the game. It's a contact sport... in Italy, but what the whistle is blown a lot more than in England because of the interpretation by homosexuals.
Good grief.
He's had support. Oh, he's had support from no less a figure than Berlusconi, and you'd want him in your corner, who said these are the kind of things that happen on the field, and it's wrong to put them in the papers. Mancini was wrong, says Berlusconi.
Yeah. It must have been quite... difficult for Mancini to do that, don't you think? Given that that's the environment, and if that's everybody's thinking, but I've got to applaud Mancini to.
Yeah,
he must have known what was going to, you know, what a
storm
was going to.
By and large, I mean, Berlusconi is one of the few voices saying that this shouldn't have been mentioned. This should have been, you know, what happens on the field. Sarri, of course, came out with the comment, "I apologise if I've caused any offence because I've had lots of gay friends in my life." But anyway, we'll see what happens with that. In the meantime, that was a victory for Inter away at Napoli, which caught a lot of people by surprise because Napoli, top of the table, have been doing so well. This is in the Cup. Inter won 2-0. They've been struggling a bit of late. They go through to the semi-final. The other semi-final, it's going to be interesting. Their semi-final is going to be against Juventus. But the other semi-final is Milan taking on Alessandria, who beat Spezia. They are a third-tier team.
First time ever?
No, it's the first time since
when?
For them, yeah. But it's the first time since, who was it, Bari, 32 years ago. So this is really, I mean, they haven't been in the top flight since 1960, back in the days when they had a young kid called Gianni Rivera coming through.
Ooh.
And this game's going to be a really tough one for him because he then became a Milan legend, won the Ballon d'Or while he was at Milan, one of Italy's greatest ever kind of dieci's played in four World Cups. I didn't realise that. Four World Cups. Scored the decisive goal in that incredible, the greatest World Cup game ever, the semi-final game with West Germany in 1970. One for, you know, fans of black and white football. Anyway, so that's amazing that they're through to that semi-final. And Juve beat Lazio in the repeat of the final. They are going to be playing Inter next Wednesday in the Cup, which you actually didn't care that much about, but we've begun talking about it. So, and let me also mention that Juve this weekend have one of their biggest grudge matches of the season as they face Roma, one of the many title contenders who they've blown past on their 10-game winning streak. Juve have now moved into second place. Roma are now dropped back to fifth. 9 points off the lead, but of course they've got Luciano Spalletti back. He's now had a week with the players. We'll see how much difference it makes in that massive game. That's Sunday evening, and yes, you can watch it if you want.
How did you see that one go?
Juve will win. Yeah, probably quite heavily. Yeah. Anyway, speaking of foreign leagues, this note on Greece. For the first time since May last year, Olympiacos have dropped points. First time since May last year that they've dropped points in the league. Wow. A run of 17 consecutive wins. Wow. They got held to a 1-1 draw by Platanias. I'm not familiar with them. Platanias haven't won since mid-December. But they are a bit of a bogey side. It says here for producer Ben, who's well up on his Greek football, a bit of a bogey side for Olympiacos. They were the team who last took points off the Greek
Giants. Do you say bogey side because they go up their nose?
I don't know. No, I think it's more about the bogeyman, isn't it?
Yeah. Sorry, just being silly.
Anyway, so that means that Olympiacos is lead at the top of the Greek... I'm guessing it's Superliga, isn't it?
Superliga.
It's just 16 points now.
Oh.
Well, you say, oh, because you're more familiar with the thing, the PSG, who are, Philippe, how many points clear?
I've stopped counting.
21 points.
21 points.
Do you know what the goal difference?
Plus 73.
Plus 42.
Plus 42. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
They could be champions mathematically by the end of February.
Great. Let's get it all sorted. Everyone will be delighted.
Yeah,
go home.
Absolutely fantastic.
They face a third place Angers. Remarkable, yeah. Angers, no?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I don't know if you can say that it's remarkable or it's
more
tragic.
About the fact that Lyon and Monaco and Marseille have been a bit... Saint-Étienne.
Marseille, yes, huge disappointment.
Lyon have been pretty big disappointments, haven't they?
Yeah, pretty big disappointment, but perhaps more reasons, more explanations, blah, blah, blah. But it's true that... and PSG are not particularly convincing. Don't know if you caught...
Haven't lost a game yet.
Yeah, I know, but you've seen them in the cup against Toulouse. And Toulouse, you know, you've seen them. They're not the greatest side in France in Ligue 1. And they had to rely on Zlatan doing yet another of his escape Houdini-esque thingies right. to score in the 89th minute to go through.
He Zlatan'd it. Listener was asking this morning, Philippe, PSG, good or bad? This is Sam Appley. Good or bad for French domestic football?
Bad.
Good or bad for French international football in the lead up to the
bad.
Euros?
Anything good about PSG?
The one thing is that because they're the only club who have got the resources, as shown in the new Deloitte's report, which is just out, by the way, where they have commercial revenue.
Are they fourth?
Fourth, I think, yes. And it's over 200 million per year, which is just crazy. So they have the financial resources to have players like Zlatan and Thiago Silva and David Luiz and, you know, you name it, and Lavezzi and Cavani and so forth, so which no other French club has. So they add glitter to that. Mm. And also, without them, I have to say that the country ranking of France in the UEFA rankings would just sink. Out of place. So That's you could say that's good in general, and also it maintains. But there is no interest in the league whatsoever. We know who's going to win it.
Right,
it's boring.
PSG, good or bad for Chelsea?
Well, I was looking at that. It's not a great PSG at the moment. I mean, beaten the league.
I'm not sure if you've seen Chelsea.
I've seen Chelsea, but a few times. The one important thing is our colleagues from L'Equipe, they've put together the schedule of both clubs before they first meet. When would that be? On the 16th February. Mm. And usually it's all about English clubs complaining, you know, the League Cup, the FA Cup, replays, league, well, we don't stop playing. And in fact, PSG will play three more games than Chelsea between now and this game of the round of 16. And they're not necessarily easy games. They're going to play at Saint-Etienne. They're going to play at Marseille. Mm. Which is never easy. They're going to play in the cup. We don't know against whom yet because the draw hasn't happened. They're going to play against Lille as well. And then they go to, they host Chelsea at the Parc des Princes.
So interesting.
They're going to have a tough run-up of games. And Laurent Blanc will probably rotate as is his wont.
He can play the kids in the league.
Yeah.
42... plus 42 on the goal difference. Do you know who else has got a goal difference, coincidentally, of plus 42, Barry?
Celtic.
You are right. Why don't you tell us what happened to them on Tuesday night and how it left them in the Scottish Premiership?
They played Hamilton Academical.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a tightly fought game, which Celtic edged 8-1.
Right.
To leave them 6 points clear at the top of the SPO.
Greg, you were saying that they were 4-0 up after 3-0?
3-0 up after 10 minutes.
Yeah. Really was academical after that. Wow.
Badoom-tish.
That's their biggest win since they beat Aberdeen 9-0 in 2010. Craig Anderson says, how about some love for East Kilbride FC of Scotland's Lowland League, who will be facing Celtic in the last 16 of the Scottish Club? This after East Kilbride beat Lothian Thistle 2-0 this week. And
East Kilbride are from the fifth tier.
That's the fifth tier, is it?
And the team they beat are from the sixth tier.
Their full name is Lothian Thistle Hutchinson Vale. This game was played against East Kilbride in front of 660 people.
Well, that's a full house.
Right.
The K Stadium, I think it's called, it holds 600 people. Or I'm not sure the capacity even is 600, but because I was looking it up and it was gave it as 5-something. But the East Kilbride were only formed 5 years ago. They represent a town of about 75,000 people, but they've never had a team in the senior Scottish leagues.
Isn't it two clubs actually merging?
That I couldn't tell you.
All right.
I think it's well established that I'm no expert in Scottish football.
Right. Well, there you go. That's a lovely way to finish off.
Yeah, we're just talking about attendance.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because there's, the round of 32 was played in France in the cup and
Which cup?
La Coupe de France,
oui, okay.
La Coupe de la Ligue, and obviously the one performance which actually makes the front page in L'Equipe today, which shows that the cup does matter in some country, not just in France, and not just in England, is Trélissac, a club from a rugby region from near Périgueux, fourth division, who beat Ligue 1 Lille. And there were over 7,000 people who went to that game, and which is a higher attendance than a number of Ligue 1 games this season, which proves that there's still life in that particular competition.
Right, or at least more life than there is in a lot of Ligue 1 games.
Yes, there's that too.
Okay, all right then.
And the FA Cup.
On which sobering note, we come to the end of today's exciting football roundup. Although, what's that piece of paper you've just been handed?
I have in my hand a piece of paper, which tells me that East Kilbride reformed in 2010 after a merger of Jackton Boys Club.
Get in there!
And Stewartfield FC.
Oh, really?
Good knowledge for you. I listened to an interview with their general secretary or something. He didn't mention that when he was asked about their origins.
Really?
No.
What did he say? So
he just said they were founded in 2010. As if founded out of the ether.
Right. Well, that certainly puts everything in perspective there, Barry. That's, as I say, pretty much it. Anything you want to add, Greg?
No, nothing.
All right, excellent. Thanks for being on.
Oh, sorry. There is something. Boxing trainer who I mentioned last week found out that I'd mentioned his training methods when I went boxing this week. I was particularly unhappy that I didn't mention that the club is the Times Amateur Boxing Club in King's Cross. He just wanted to mention the club's name.
All right, so if you're in King's Cross... happy. And you fancy a bit of boxing, why not drop by?
There you go.
Philippe Auclair, one last thing?
Yeah, just one last thing related to my friends at FIFA. Everybody says that all five presidential candidates are the same, but I would say no. Four of them have the huge advantage of not being Sheikh Salman.
Is it Sheikh Salman that doesn't?
Doesn't what?
Have that advantage.
That's right, not being Sheikh Salman. Yeah. Absolutely. And there is some more... revelations, not allegations, have come out about
this.
He's
the man who's alleged to have imprisoned and tortured loads of athletes.
It's not quite that. He was in charge of the commission that identified and punished athletes in Bahrain, including probably their greatest ever footballer, who was imprisoned, tortured, beaten, and so forth. He's also personally overseen the relegation of clubs which happen to be emanations of the Shiite community, the Al Khalifa, the ruling family being Sunni. So he's a real charmer, and he's been denying this all along because he knows that if it's established that indeed he did that, he has no chance.
Right.
And today... Yep. An organization called BIRD, which is the Bahraini Institute for Right and Democracy, has written to all the major sponsors of FIFA with documents establishing that he was indeed at the head of this commission. Ooh. So good luck, Salman. Or not.
Where can people read more about this big development?
I think our friend Owen Gibson is preparing some stuff about this particular affair.
Well, looking forward to seeing Owen's piece. That's it for today. We'll catch up with you Monday. See you on Monday. Bye for now.